Where's the chicken? There we go. I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. I figure that's my cue. You're looking at me like, why is he waiting? It's kind of like getting rolling in the morning with your first cup of coffee. It's hard to start the show without the chicken. Hey, welcome to the show, friends. Greg Kokel here, your host. Glad you joined me. And those of you who've been around for a while know what that was all about. But for newcomers, that was weird. It's okay. The show is Stand to Reason. I'm making a defense for classical Christianity, classical Christian values. You call in, give me a piece of your mind. I call in and give you a piece. I respond and give you a piece of mind. 855-243. See what happens when I don't hit my bird there first off? 855-243-9975 is the number to call in if you'd like to chat with me. Of course, you got to call in during our live show, which is Tuesdays from 4 until 6 p.m. Los Angeles time, because that's where I'm broadcasting from. If you're outside the United States of America, 562 is our local area code here, and 424-8229 is the number to call after you've dialed, of course, the international code, which I think for us is 1. How did we get 1? We got 1. We got number 1. 1-562-424-8229. Just a quick reminder for some of you, I've mentioned this a few times already, Rethink has become such a huge part of our enterprise, I almost take it for granted. But Rethink is a student apologetics conference where we encourage students to rethink apologetics and Christianity to build a solid foundation, to have the confidence and the courage to go out and stand in the line of fire for the greatest message the world has ever heard, the gospel of Jesus of Nazareth. And we take seriously passing the baton to the next generation who are going to have it a whole lot tougher than I had it I became a Christian in the early 70s. But that whole generation is, we're hanging up our cleats. We're moving on here pretty soon, and a whole new generation is coming up to take our place. We got our young guns here at Stand to Reason. We're really thrilled about them and expanding our base as time goes on. But we are reaching out to the next generation, the young people, the junior hires, middle schoolers, high schoolers, that group that is going to face a tougher challenge, as I mentioned, than we have ever faced. And so we have this strategy called Rethink Apologetics Student Conferences. We started in Orange County, about 8 or 9 years ago? And then we expanded to Dallas and to Birmingham. And this fall, we will expand to our Midwest regional, which is going to be in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So just to bring you up to speed, we have the best speakers, the best topics, fabulous worship. I mean, it is so much fun for young people. It's even fun for me, and I'm an old guy. I even enjoy it. And I watch the young folks that come in, and they have never seen anything like this before because we don't dumb anything down. We take Christianity seriously. We take the defense of Christianity seriously, and we deliver to them the kind of tools that they need to be able to stand for Christ in a contrary culture. Dallas is coming up March 29th and 30th. The early bird deadline, that means you could save $10, is February 1st, which is about a week from now. So we want you to go to our website, RethinkApologetics.com, get information, sign up if you're in the Dallas area. In Birmingham, Alabama, April 26th and 27th. By the way, the Dallas event is the 29th and 30th of March. Birmingham, we got April 26th and 27th. In fact, the deadline for that, early bird, is March 1st. Orange County, September 27th and 28th, Minneapolis, November 8th and 9th. So you'll be getting more information as time goes on, but this has really been an exciting going concern over the years. We have thousands of kids show up. I think, we had over 2,400 show up, or is it 2,300 showed up in Orange County at a church that only holds 2,000. So we had overflow areas and everything. These things have been going great, so I want you to consider that. It'll help you, young person. Plus, we don't check IDs at the door. So if you're an old codger like me, an old-timer, you can we'll let you in. All right? Now, this next piece is in the From the Mouths of Babes category. It's a we were asked for advice about something. I'm chuckling because of the way this came down, although it's a serious issue. We were asked for advice about dealing with a kind of transgender family confrontation situation. And I'd like to share with you the details of the email that was sent to us and some of our thoughts, and then actually how it played out. Because there's a couple of thoughts here. One is we have to deal with these challenges to help you. You sometimes will contact us directly, and we'll do our best to give advice about how to navigate. Secondly, these circumstances are not always easy. And sometimes on staff, we're trying to figure out the best direction to go. In this case, Alan Schliemann had the best ideas, not Greg Kokel, partly because he's just got a nicer bedside manner on these kinds of things, partly because he's dealt with these issues so much more frequently and more thoroughly than I have. And so his advice ended up winning out. But it'll also show, even with good advice, and I think the advice we gave on how to respond was good advice, and the person who asked the question followed the advice and did not get a good response, which we kind of expected anyway. So I want to give this play this whole thing out for you just to give you the perspective, and it may be educational for you in a number of different ways. But the request went like this. My wife and kids were out of town this weekend visiting my wife's side of the family. He had other business to attend to, apparently. One member of the family is a transgender male. That means this individual is a female sexually, but they take their gender to be female instead of adopting the gender that they were, as this person put it, assigned at birth. Okay, so most of you know the drill here. And so they're all hanging out. This person who asked the question has younger children, 7-year-old, this Christian family. And the 7-year-old was talking with, we'll just call her Bob right now. And incidentally, generally, my own view is if I'm talking with a transgendered person, I'm going to address that person the way that person wants to be addressed, okay? Just because to do otherwise is just to invite trouble and to seem or appear to be mean-spirited. But in this particular case, it was the 7-year-old daughter of this questioner who was talking to Bob, who is a transgender female, that is, born female and now going as a male. And in fact, this individual even had what they call top surgery, which means had both of her breasts removed so she'd look more like a boy. She was in her early 20s. And so the 7-year-old says to Bob, and this is where the Mouths of Innocent Babes part comes in, you sound like a girl. It was completely innocent. Bob looked like a boy, but sounded like a girl. And so this bothered Bob, and Bob texted the family to kind of clarify and correct in a certain sense, and said, well, that they had had this conversation with their daughter, who also said, well, God made you a girl, so you're a girl, kind of matter-of-factly, which really bothered Bob. And so Bob wanted to make sure that the family taught their daughter properly about so-called gender fluidity. Now, the question is, any wisdom on how to respond? We don't want this to become a big issue, but we want to be clear on our stance. And so you can see this Christian family is put in a tough spot. And the expectation of the transgendered person is that everyone will go along with that point of view, even so much so that they will correct the child of the Christian family and properly educate her as to the appropriate approach to gender. Now, I think the most difficult thing about these circumstances is not dealing with the issue itself. I mean, the issue, the transgender issue, the concept of so-called gender fluidity versus a kind of binary gender that in the case of human beings, you have males and females, and that's pretty much the way reality is structured, even though individual males and females may have a different mental framework regarding their gender. Even so, the world is what the world is, okay? So this is how I approach these things. And to be honest with you, folks, listeners, my strength is not in working with the individuals offering these challenges. My bigger concern is in working with Christians, that Christians do not get confused because the culture is confused, all right? And a lot of this happens, of course, and that is the culture is going one way and aggressively, and it is not going in the direction of physical reality, and it ends up denying physical reality because physical reality is pretty obvious. That's what I focus on more. And so I don't want the Christians who are confronting this to say, wow, everybody else seems to be going this other direction, and maybe what do we do? And my general counsel is, just because the culture is confused about the nature of reality does not mean that we need to be confused about the nature of reality. This is not difficult. Some people say, well, there are dozens and dozens of possible genders, hundreds even. And my thinking on this, though I don't always respond directly to a person who's saying that this way because it would be impolitic, but my thinking on this is the thing that is fluid or thing that has all the possibilities is one's own imagination. But this isn't the way human beings are. Human beings are male and female, and because they are male and female, male or female, it makes reproduction possible. That's just the way the world works. But there's something else going on in the culture now. This is the clay telling the potter the way the world's going to be. This is the clay trying to be in charge, saying, I don't have to go with the body I've been given. I can go any direction I want. I can ignore that. And so I think the most difficult thing is not seeing what's clearly true, because the physical reality is clear. I think the difficult part is dealing with the individual who is in denial for whatever reason of physical reality. And I don't take the denial lightly. These issues strike fairly close to home for me personally. And so I don't take these lightly. These are tragic circumstances where people are adopting identities whatever this psychological dynamic is that causes this, they end up with mental identities that are different from their bodies. And they think their mental identities are the truth of the matter and their bodies are not. And this creates a schism. This breaks them right in two. In fact, they know they're broken in two because they'll explain it that way sometimes. I'm a man in a woman's body. Or I'm a woman in a man's body. This is a terrible place to be because they will probably never be whole. Now, they can be politically correct and be encouraged in this direction that leads to a lot of personal dissatisfaction. The attempted suicide rates for transgenders are gargantuan. Nevertheless, people still want to encourage that. So my input here was going to the facts of the matter, not to the relational element. And the facts of the matter is that you might point out that the daughter was referring to her cousin's body in its natural non-surgicalized state. That's why she said, you sound like a girl. She wasn't talking about her gender in her mind. She was talking about her physical qualities that were not interfered with. And the cousin was focusing on the perspective of her own mind. Bob, in this case, was focusing on what her mind thought. Now, to me, the real question is, if there's a disagreement between the two, the mind and the body, what is more likely? The body is wrong or the mind is mistaken? Now, as I mentioned earlier, making that point directly probably would not be helpful. But I'm just speaking to you to think about it. And like I said, my focus is more on encouraging Christians not to be confused and encouraging other regular folk not to be confused by a confused culture. However, when it comes to dealing with the circumstance, which is really the question that was being asked, Alan Schliemann is much better at that. He's much more skilled at it. He's thought about it more. And he offered a response that this person then employed. And this is what the response was to the transgendered relative. Let me find it here. Okay, here it is. And this is almost word for word what Alan suggested. Thanks for letting us know about what happened. We love you, Bob, and are always glad to see you. We understand you have some ideas about gender, but it seems we don't share the same views as you. It's not a problem for us because we love you and agree that you have a right to your own views. But we can't teach our daughter something we don't agree with. I'm sure you can understand and respect that. After all, if you had kids and someone told you to teach them something you didn't agree with, I'm sure you'd also respectfully decline to do that. Now, I think that's a pretty good response. But we are not surprised at the response they received in return. And here is the response that got texted back. Are you kidding me? You're equating gender identity with something as trivial as differences in opinion? This isn't something you can just brush off as a we share different views. This is you admitting you don't see who I am as a valid person. I respected you. I thought I loved you. But how can I love someone who can't love and respect who I am enough to teach their kids the same? I am so disappointed in you. You are not my family. Ouch. Pretty harsh. But I will tell you, as I've been party to this conversation back and forth and saw it unfold and then saw the ultimate response, this response is not surprising. It's completely predictable. I want you to notice a couple of things about that response. Even though the explanation offered was utterly fair, you have your views, we have our views. You'll teach your children your views. We'll teach our children our views. We love you. Your views don't change anything. We're family. That's okay if we differ. That was the Christian response. But notice the response, a couple of things that they received. That first of all, the tolerant street is a one-way street, all right? And this you will find over and over and over and over again. We demand tolerance, which means you must tolerate our view, which means you must approve and agree with it, and in this case, teach it to your kids. But we will not tolerate your view. We won't even tolerate your unwillingness to teach my view to your kids. One-way street. Notice also that a genuine expression of love by the Christians was completely and unequivocally rejected. Here's a third thing I want you to see. The transgender person made it clear She could not love someone who disagreed with her. Doesn't that strike you as odd? But this is the way it is, and many of you know this firsthand because of the experiences that you've had in your own life with your family members, the people that are close to you. And you try to do something similar and say, well, wait a minute, I can't say that, and I'm not going to be bullied into saying that. For all the concern about bullying on the left, the LGBTQ, et cetera, crowd are the biggest bullies on the block. This is an example of that. And finally, notice that this person, because there was a disagreement and an unwillingness to cooperate with her, cut off all contact. I am so disappointed in you. You are not my family. Boom. It's the end of it. And I would not at all be surprised if later she characterized this engagement, this encounter, all of this back and forth, as the Christian cutting off contact from her and not the other way around. Because I've seen that happen fairly regularly. Christians are willing to have contact, willing to engage, willing to love, willing to be gracious, willing to live and let live, but not the other side. And last thing I want you to notice is that this who I am, and this maybe is the most critical, because there's a larger lie that is being played out here. And when I say lie, I'm using my words advisedly. This is a worldview lie. This is what I've described before as a scheme of the devil. Ephesians chapter 6, I just read it the other day. It's a scheme of the devil. Devil has schemes. Now, I know there are going to be people who say, oh, look at you. You're finding a demon under every bush. Look, I take these things seriously. There are demons. There are schemes. There are spiritual forces of wickedness in heavenly places, and they have a huge influence on people. They get people to believe foolish things that damage them. This is one of them. And here it's played out that the who I am is completely determined by what's going on inside her mind and has nothing to do with the world as it is in itself. Her own body is completely irrelevant to the question of her gender. And as I pointed out a moment ago, this isolates her completely from the realities of her physical body. And Nancy Piercy talked about this in Love Thy Body. This creates a rift or a tear that cannot be repaired. This person is heading for a terribly unhappy life. And it's not because a bunch of Christians disagree with her. That's the way they kind of characterize it. It's not. It's because they're living a lie that is inconsistent with reality. Anyway, Alan, that was great advice, though he did add a postscript. It probably won't do any good, which we learned was true. So he was prescient on that point. All right, let's go to break and then back to your calls here on Stand to Reason. I'm Greg Kokel.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible, and relevant content each week? As a nonprofit ministry, we rely on generous supporters in order to provide the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including apps, blog posts, articles, or short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. When you visit str.org/donate, you'll find a newly renovated transaction page that makes it easier than ever to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources over the past 25 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Please help us to continue on into the next 25 years by making a gift today at str.org/donate.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come speak at a location near you? If so, just send a quick email to darcy@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To learn more, just go to str.org and click on the training tab at the top of the page.
Greg Kokel here. Stand to Reason is the show. And taking your calls now, my number once again, 855-243-9975. You can dial up during the live show Tuesday evenings for me, 4 to 6 in Los Angeles. Let's start out with Coppers Cove, Texas, and Lance. Hello, Lance.
Hey, Greg. How are you doing? Good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you, Lance. Thanks a lot. What's on your mind today?
Well, a lot. I need your advice. To give you a little bit of history, I play drums in a church, and recently, a couple weeks back, there was the worship leader and her husband were out. One week they were camping, or on vacation, rather. The next week they were sick, so I was put in charge of the team, you know, so it was me and a fiddle player and a guitar player. So instead of just, you know, opening up the service, saying good morning, you know, and launching into some songs, I thought, you know, what would be the wisest thing I could do to maybe encourage some folks in the audience, you know, in the Christian life? And
because you were you were filling in as the lead worship leader for the weekend, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And so I thought, you know, what could I do? I could share, you know, a couple scriptures, you know, and a couple of thoughts, you know, about the Christian life or whatever. Well, so I did that a couple weeks in a row. And then this last Sunday, I talked a little bit longer than I did, you know, the few times before. And I talked about, you know, just different ideas, you know, and I said, this is a topic that I don't hear about a lot, and a lot of churches don't like to touch this stuff, you know, and this is the issue of false teachers, and I shared from 2 Peter chapter 2 and Acts 20, and then I shared a story when I used to work back in California. I shared a story about a guy I worked with who used to own a Christian bookstore.
Yeah.
And I said, this guy, I asked him if he carried a certain book by a certain author. And he goes, oh, yeah, absolutely, I carry that. And it's because of that book I'm able to keep my doors open.
Oh.
And I said, did you know that that person teaches that God is nine persons?
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And, yeah, and he told me, the guy says, well, so what, 9, 12, 24? God will tell me what he wants me to know. And I shared, you know, with the congregation, I told that guy, I said, you, brother, God has already told you. He has already revealed himself as a triune God very, very clearly.
So scripture. Did you start getting some pushback here then for kind of sermonizing before the worship?
Yes. Not for doing it, but it came up in a team leader meeting that we had last night.
Uh-huh.
And the pushback came about because I said, you know, I got a little lengthy there, you know, and everybody kind of laughed, you know. And but it wasn't that I was doing it. It was just that I was kind of long about it. But what it was is the pastor said, you know, we have a rule in this kind of church that they want us to keep things down to a seventh grade level for the audience. And, you know, so he goes, it was too deep, you know. Nobody got it. Maybe some did. And I'm just
what, seventh grader? Wait, let me just pause for a minute. Seventh graders couldn't understand that when a person teaches there are nine persons in the Trinity, that this is a little bit odd for Christianity. I mean, everybody here at the studio has got their brows furrowed like, huh? That's not at the seventh grade level?
Yeah, and exactly. And later on, I asked the pastor that. I said, how was that not on the seventh grade level? I shared from 2 Peter, Acts 20, and then I shared a story, and then I encouraged everybody to test all things, you know, and to be aware and watchful.
Right.
You know, who couldn't get that? You know, you're treating these people like they're little blind kids or something, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, but it's just, and things have just been going on for a while. I've seen so much. And I'm so dedicated to the band members that I have. I've kind of had one foot out the door, but yet I feel like, you know, well, we can stay and make a difference, and I don't want to leave them, you know, my fellow musicians hanging.
Right.
You know?
Now, let me ask you a question, Lance, though. Did he take exception with the point proper that the person you're talking about is Benny Hinn, who wrote the book Good Morning, Holy Spirit?
Yeah.
It was many years ago. And did your pastor take exception with the point proper, or he was just saying, you know, you're sermonizing a bit long and you're going, you're over the people's head, and that's creating a problem for the people listening?
Yeah, he did not bring up who wrote the book at all. He didn't, no.
No, he didn't. Okay, well, so
his problem was that I was too deep for the
Okay, so, and so your question really is, what do you do because you're frustrated with this circumstance? Yeah. Okay, I have a couple of thoughts about this. And, you know, you can eat the meat and throw away the bones, all right? But for one, if you're I'm just going to go back to the beginning. If you're a guest worship leader, you want to be careful about sermonizing too much, because unless this is the standard way that this is always done, it sounds like it was a little different, and there's nothing wrong with you wanting to encourage the congregation, but what ends up happening is that the worship leader does the sermon instead of the preacher doing the sermon. So sometimes that's just, you know, getting out of your role, and it's better to kind of generally play along with the way that the situation is set up. It doesn't sound like that created a big problem for you, but it's just something you want to think about. Secondly, you want to be mindful to the time issue. So these are all practical concerns, just so you are going along. You're not creating a problem for yourself just by the way you're doing what you're doing, okay? I think it's really good that the worship leader is concerned about the spiritual life of the group and offers some thoughts regarding that, but you don't want to take the pastor's job away from him and do what it's his job to do. But now you have a different concern, and that is you have the pastor saying, well, you were too complex. This sounds a little bit odd to me, like maybe that's not the real objection, because it's hard to imagine that what you described to me was something that a seventh grader couldn't follow, okay?
Right.
Certainly the rest of the congregation. So I'm not sure what to make of that. I don't think that's a major faux pas. I mean, some people are in, it's not like he was denying the Trinity or something like that, or siding with Benny Hinn, or saying you should never use names correcting people or teaching bad things that you don't like from the pulpit. I mean, that would have been another issue, but it didn't seem like he was doing that. It just seemed like he's expressing a philosophy about how they approach teaching in that church that is discomforting for you, because it seems like it just leaves people in an immature state, which I agree with you about the point itself. Okay, but it is the pastor's job to set the tone and decide what that's going to be. So your job as a member of the team is to decide whether you want to follow the pastor's lead on this or not. And you might say, this isn't even the kind of church that I find is satisfying to me, because it's all too basic. Too much pablum, too much baby food, and I want something richer. And so for that reason, you may want to move on. So from what I could tell so far, I don't think he's not making what I would consider a good choice. The idea that I have is you set a full table, some things on the lower shelf, some things on the top shelf, so to speak, and then people can go where they want and get what they want. Then everybody has something for themselves, not everything on the bottom shelf kind of deal. But that's my view. He has a different view, and he's the pastor. So then you can say, all right, well, I want to play my part in this church and mind my P's and Q's and play along with the team and do my worship and maybe offer a few words if they're okay with that, and keep it simple, because that's what the pastor, who is the chief shepherd of that local congregation, has said, and I'm under his authority. You can go that route. Or you could say, gee, I don't like that point of view, or I don't like a view that just teaches pablum, so I'm going to find a new church. And then you could move on. So my sense is that this is a different a difference in opinion about what you want from a church and what he wants to give to a church. It's not a big issue theologically. It's a prudential concern. I side with you in the prudential concern. I think people should be given more substance. But it's his job to call the shots of that sort. And so you're faced with a decision whether you want to kind of stay and play. I mean, in the, not just the drums, but I mean in the broadest sense, make your contribution, or you want to find a new place where you can be useful in the body and be fed more thoroughly yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, because there's, I mean, the whole teaching thing there, it is definitely milk. You know, there's no, and, you know, he'll like say, you know, hey, if you're listening today, you'll get something, but if you're not listening, it's going to go right over your head. Like, look out, here comes some deep stuff, and it's just like, what, you know, what was that warning about? You know, there's nothing deep here whatsoever, you know. And I
right.
Just,
well, the warning isn't deep stuff. I think it's pretty straightforward, you know, just like a stop sign or a warning sign curves ahead. When you have warnings in Scripture, young, innocent Christians, young Christians, immature Christians, whatever, should still be given those kinds of warnings. I don't. This is where you and I agree, but we seem to disagree with the pastor. So I'm on the same page with you on that. Mm-hmm. However, he's the pastor. I used to be in a staff of on the pastoral staff of a church, and I didn't agree a lot of times with what the pastor was doing or the direction he's going. Okay, I could go to him and privately and say, "Here's my view. Here's my input." But as I told him, "You're the boss, not me." So I'm giving you my input, and I'm going to let you answer to the Lord. I mean, do what you want with it, and you're the one who has to answer to the Lord about the church, not me. And it wasn't a snooty, snotty thing. I knew my place. I was willing to make my contribution, but also I had my hat in my hand. So that's the kind of attitude I want to encourage in this situation, because I think it's a healthy attitude to have, even if you disagree with the pastor's approach to teaching the church.
Right.
All righty?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Lance, I got a break coming up, so why don't you chew on that, and maybe next time you call, you can tell me what you ended up doing, staying or leaving, or how that worked out.
Okay.
But you
want to,
here, one last thought.
Yes, sir.
It's hard to stay at a church where, for whatever reason, you don't respect the leadership. Because you're obliged to show respect to the leadership. If in your heart you don't respect the leadership, it's probably, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the leadership, but in terms of your, in a situation, if a person can't respect the leadership, they should probably find a church where they can. All right? So word to the wise.
Right.
Okay,
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate that. And let's go to a break and then to more calls on Stand to Reason.
The Christian worldview is under attack. Its claims about truth, Jesus, morality, and the Bible are all being challenged by some of the toughest critics in the world. That's why I'm thrilled to tell you about Stand to Reason's Rethink Apologetics Student Conference. The Rethink Conference prepares middle school through college-age students to respond with confidence to their teachers, professors, and peers who seek to belittle their Christian beliefs. Join thousands of other leaders, parents, and students as some of the top Christian apologists spend an energizing weekend responding to the hardest questions Christians face. Visit RethinkApologetics.com to learn more and register today.
What does a silo of soybeans or an old 1987 Nissan truck have to do with apologetics? When donated, both enabled STR to provide Christians like you with the resources you need to gain confidence in defending your faith. STR's partnership with iDonate makes donating non-cash items easy. You can give personal items like vehicles, stock, jewelry, gift cards, and more. iDonate takes care of selling the items and gives the cash proceeds to STR. So if you're looking for a unique way to support the work of Stand to Reason, consider donating that random gift card Aunt Bertha gave you last Christmas. Simply go to str.org/donate and click the link at the bottom of the page.
Hi, my name is Alan Schliemann. Besides abortion, there are 4 biotechnologies that threaten innocent human life today. Find out what they are in this month's episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud. Look for it on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
All righty then, Greg Kokel back with you here, giving you a piece of my mind as I do every Tuesday night from 4 until 6 p.m. Los Angeles time. And that's the time, of course, that you can give a call and chat with me about whatever's on your mind in the area of ethics, values, and religion. Hey, quick announcement here. Coming up in February, that would be February 20th, Wednesday through February 23rd on a Saturday, I am actually going to be in Sonora, Mexico. And, I mean, my Spanish is pretty rusty. I'm good at restaurants, but that's about it. La cuenta, por favor. I can order, ask for the check. But I'll have a translator, and so I'll be involved with some good people down there doing a conference. And it's going to be Sebime Seminary in Hermosillo, Sonora, Mexico. I'm going to be talking about tactics, among other things. And if you want to get information about it, I'll give you the website. It's La Verdad, that's LAVERDAD, .IESB, as in boy, .MX, for Mexico. So La Verdad, .IESB, .MX. And all the details are going to be there. So I just thought I'd mention it. I have never taught in Mexico before. I mean, not like this, not with Stand to Reason. I've been to Mexico before. So it's going to be a new experience for me, and I'll be doing tactics, which is available in Spanish. And incidentally, I don't have it here. It's in the other room, but I got a box yesterday from my publisher, Harper Row Zondervan. And in that box were five copies of The Story of Reality in Spanish. I can't say the title in Spanish because I have to read it, but I was really thrilled to see that. So that is available actually on Amazon. I looked up the Spanish title and there it was. And so that's available. The Story of Reality is now available in Spanish. It's a massive audience there of Christians who are Spanish-speaking who I think would definitely benefit from this book. The thing is that getting into that market, letting people know it's available is hard. So I'm just letting you know you can pass it on to your friends if you found The Story of Reality to be helpful in your life. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Fremont, California, Larry, welcome to the show, Larry.
Hey, Greg. La Historia de la Realidad.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
La Historia de la Realidad.
Right, but that isn't the way they did it.
They started differently than that?
Yes, they did. And they started out, Historia is the second. The first one is, it's on my desk. Madison, could you get the book, The Story of Reality in Spanish? It's over there on the table. So I just left it in there. I didn't even think about, you know, I don't think about these things. I'm a lousy author when it comes to marketing, you know, but no, they did something like the truth thing of history is the way it looks like to me, and or the truth
I'll,
of the
I'll
story,
look it up.
Something like that. So I'll give it to you in just a second, but I'm very, really happy. Here it is. It is La Verdadera Historia. La Verdadera Historia. V-E-R-D-A-D-E-R-A. Historia. There you go. And then plus the subtitle, which I'm not even going to...
The Truth of History.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. The Truth of the Story,
okay.
Or something. I didn't make that choice, but in any event, I'm glad to see it in Spanish.
Actually, that's
print.
Not a bad translation.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. So what's on your mind, Larry?
Yeah, I talked to you about this years ago, and I was kind of wondering if your view had changed, because mine is sort of... I've gotten more stronger on this, if anything. But I wonder what you think about having flags in the, specifically the American flag, or I guess sometimes the flag of Israel, in the pulpit or in the chancel or the sanctuary of the... Not sure what the exact terminology
sure,
is for
sure.
The parts of
well,
a church.
You know, I wouldn't put a flag, any kind of flag, on the pulpit, you know, just
but you'd
it's
have
distracting.
It in the sanctuary?
But, pardon me?
You'd have one in the sanctuary?
No, well, so that's the question. Broadly, we're not worried about where it's located, but is it appropriate to have, like, an American flag inside of a Christian church?
Because I could see having one in front of the church.
Yeah.
And that, it kind of makes sense to me. Because in a broad, I mean, you know, in a broad sense, this is a Christian country. And patriotism is certainly a Christian value.
Yeah, well, I talked about this
strongly, especially in Romans.
Yeah, well, I talked about this, about the patriotism question, I think last week, maybe the week before.
Yeah, so I heard that.
And my point there was, is patriotism is pride in one's country, and if one's country has something to be proud of, then pride in it is appropriate. And I think that's the case for America. So displaying a flag as a family or as a group because of the virtues of our country, I think is fine. Now, some people are really sensitive to something secular like that inside a sanctuary. I'm not that sensitive to it. You know, I probably wouldn't put it on the dais right there, you know, but I wouldn't put any flag in the dais. Think about all the kinds of things that people have in churches, though. They have lots of banners and odds and ends and stuff, but it's usually directed towards Christ and not some civic concern. I understand that. I don't think there's... I'm not sensitive to it. Let's just put it that way. Maybe your views have changed. You were and you aren't, or maybe you are and you weren't, or whatever. But it doesn't really bother me that much. I think you just want to be careful that what the focus is. The focus is the church being called out of the community into a congregation where Christ is exalted and people are taught, preaching is done, and people are loved on and cared for, you know. But the fact that there's a acknowledgement that they're celebrating that we're American Christians doing this and we're proud of our country for the things that it's worth being proud of, which are plenty, I don't have a problem with that.
I just think it's sending the wrong message, because it's saying that it's identifying Christianity exclusively with America. I mean, it's even more confusing if you have an American flag and an Israeli flag.
Well, the Israeli flag I can understand because of the identification of Christians with national Israel because of Old Testament promises.
Well, I don't actually. I'm a Christian, and I don't identify with national Israel.
Oh, okay, but we're not talking...
with Jews as a people.
Right.
Yes, I love Jews.
But Larry, we're not talking about you. You wouldn't have it. We're just talking about whether it's appropriate for Christians. And when Christians do identify...
Well, I think Christians in general keep the command of... What does it say? Those who curse you will be cursed, and those who bless you will be blessed.
Yes, yeah, that's
about Abraham.
In Genesis
chapter...
Well, gotta
remember, not all descendants of Abraham are Jews.
Right. Okay,
Persians,
we're not going to get it. Stop. Hold on
Abraham.
Just a minute. Larry, let me... Larry, my turn.
Descendants of Abraham.
Okay, Larry, my turn, okay? Hold on. I'm not going to get into that issue about who are the descendants of Abraham. We were on one issue, not whether you would like to have the flag, but whether it's appropriate for any others. I was just simply making the point that having a flag of Israel makes sense with a Christian church, particularly if that church thinks, in a biblical sense, it's appropriate to identify with national Israel. So that's all I was saying there, okay? I also don't think an American flag means, however you put it, I didn't write it down, but something like we are exclusively identifying Christianity with America. I don't think that's the statement. The statement is that the people of that congregation, or at least that church, the pastor and the staff, identify themselves as Americans. They are proud of that, and they associate themselves with being Americans while being Christians. So neither of those things do I find at all offensive. But if you find it offensive or you don't like it, well, then don't display the flag, or maybe if you really feel strongly about it, then find a church that doesn't do that if your church does. So I'm not sure what else to tell you.
But it seems like you're saying that God supports America, the United States, let's say, more than other countries, and other countries aren't as holy, aren't as Christian.
No, I'm not saying that, because God didn't put the flag up. The Christians put the flag up. So it shows their support of the country,
God's... Why can't they put it in front of their house, but not in the church where many different kind of people worship? Some of those people might not even be citizens of the United States.
Well, that's all right. But the church is in the United States, and it's reflecting its appreciation of the United States by putting the flag up. So
maybe the pastor likes Pepsi a lot. Should he put up a a soda pop ad in the church. I mean, it just seems sacrilegious to me.
Okay.
You know, I love America, you know, as much as you possibly could. But
well,
the gospel is for everybody,
yes.
Not just for Americans.
I do not disagree with that point at all. I actually don't think the flag and a Pepsi Cola thing are parallel at all. But you know, so we got a difference of opinion here. That's all I could say. And but I appreciate your call, Larry. And I've got another call in Allen, Texas. So let's go there, James. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Greg.
Hi there.
Hi. So I've been meeting with a Jehovah's Witness for around a year.
Okay.
I let him in my home because I thought it'd be a good opportunity to learn about what Jehovah's Witness believe from a Jehovah's Witness. At my church in Bible study, we're going through 1 John.
Yeah.
And as a teaser, my Bible study leader, group leader, he said that in a couple of weeks we'll be studying 2 John.
Mm-hmm.
And in referencing to my meeting with the Jehovah's Witness, he said that he would be interested to hear my thoughts on 2 John 7. So
okay.
On our way home, my wife looked up the verse, and there's some pretty strong language. So my question is, in principle, is 2 John 7 a warning to us from allowing teachers of a different Christ into our homes?
Yeah, it's not just verse 7. Also, verse 10 is the one that talks about the house. So verse 7 says, many deceivers have gone into the world, those mm-hmm. who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. Now, that's probably directly referring to Gnostic teaching, not Arian teaching. And not mm-hmm. both were early errors, heresies, but the Jehovah's Witnesses are more like the Arians and not like the Gnostics. But nevertheless, he's giving a general command about being careful about who is part of that community. Verse 10, he says that kind of person is the deceiver and the Antichrist. And verse 10, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, the teaching of Christ, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting, for the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. Okay, now a couple of thoughts on here. The most important element here is what he means in verse 10 by not receiving him into your house, and that would be a him that follows the description in verse 7 that they're deceivers, they deny Christ, etc. Okay? They deny that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh or some such vital teaching, which Jehovah's Witnesses do. They deny that Jesus is God. And so it looks like at first glance, oh man, he came into my house, now I'm participating in his sin. That's not what's going on in 2 John. 2 John is a letter written to somebody who is an elder of a home church. Okay? The elder, John, to the chosen lady, this is verse 1, and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all those who love truth. So he's writing a letter to a home church with people in it, okay? And he is warning them of false teachers, identifying a category of error, those who deny that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. And this is the deceiver and antichrist. In fact, there is more teaching on this kind of thing in 1 John, and you're probably covering it now. But he says, somebody who brings that kind of teaching, do not allow them into your house church to teach that stuff. That's the point. You allow a false teacher to come into your Christian community and teach heretical things as authoritative, that corrupts the entire group. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. So I think that's what's going on here. Go ahead.
I'm careful. Yeah, I don't let him talk to my family. This is just between me, him, and he always brings someone else. So
I don't think that's the problem, though, James. Let me jump in just for a quick second. It isn't whether he talks to you or your family. You are not representing a home church and asking this Jehovah's Witness to come on and give instruction to the group of people in your home church. That's what's in view here. For you to have the Jehovah's Witness come into your home, that's not a problem. I mean, I promise you, Jehovah's Witness is not the only person who believes false things spiritually that comes into your home. You know, well, we all have all kinds of folks that visit our home that don't share our views. In fact, we're supposed to be hospitable to them. It is not disqualifying visitors that hold errant views about God and Jesus. This is a comment to a group that is a local body. And so it would apply to churches who allow false teachers to come into the church. This is into that local community, whether it's a home church or a larger group. In Titus, or maybe 1 Timothy, I can't remember, but they both have this list of qualifications for those who would be elders in the church. He said that, you know, you've got to have elders that can know good doctrine, because there are some people that are teaching all kinds of nonsense. They're upsetting all kinds of folks, and they must be silenced. So it's the same spirit that we see here in 2 John. We are not going to subject our church to false teaching that confuses people. Rather, we are going to refute those bad ideas so people have good, sound ideas. Okay? I hope that makes sense to you. We're just at our mark here, so we're out of time. But not to worry, James. Having a Jehovah's Witness in your house is not a bad thing. It's not disqualified by 2 John. You're doing a good job spreading the gospel to somebody who desperately needs it. So thanks for your call. I hope that helps. That's it for our time, friends. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. You give them heaven this week. All right? Bye-bye now.